maybe a different, same show, but a different land. And that land is Bookland for the next few moments, where we talk about great books that are in great independent bookstores throughout our region. And we are very lucky to be joined by James Conrad of the Golden Notebook, who's been keeping track of worthy literary pursuits and joins us this morning. James, good morning. It's wonderful to have you back.
Good morning, Joe. Thank you.
Thanks for being here, and it's good to have you on the program again. So where would you like to begin?
I would like to start with a book that just fell out of box at our store yesterday, The Catskills, Its History and How It Changed America, by Steven Silberman and Raphael Silver. It's a big, beautiful history of the Catskills, and other than Ralph Evers, there really hasn't been a lot of comprehensive history books done on the Catskills, so this was rather exciting to see. It's also a rather lavish coffee table type of book of photographs and illustrations and all that, a lot of which I've never even seen before. Well, pop quiz. I mean, who discovered the Catskills?
I don't know.
Henry Hudson.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And what was Henry Hudson actually looking for?
India. Oh, that's right. I didn't know that.
He was sent from a Dutch company, and he went up the Hudson, believing there'd be a passageway to get to India from there. Of course, the Mohegans had actually discovered the Hudson Valley a long time before that, but he gets the claim for it, and of course, we have the Hudson River and all that. The Catskills are actually called Catskill because of the word kill, which is Dutch for creek.
Right.
And then cats. They saw mountain lions and called them Catskills. That's, of course, one of the explanations for the name Catskill, but that's what they use now. The book has wonderful chapters from everything from the bluestone industry, they called it blue gold, to the fabulous hotel industry and all that that went on, and the Jewish settlements that were very big, and also later the big resort industries of the 50s. The Catskills were also the home of the first African-American resort in Kerhonkson called Peg Leg Pete's.
Mm-hmm.
It also had the first cross-dressing resort up in Jewett. The book literally just arrived yesterday. I haven't been able to read most of it, but I went to the index and looked under Woodstock, of course, and there was one particular item in there that was kind of interest that said Woodstock Ku Klux Klan Inn, which I thought was something I'd never heard of before.
Well,
apparently, Woodstock had a slightly odd history at the turn of the century in the 19th century where when the two the two artist colonies opened, the Birdcliff and the Maverick. The Maverick was an offshoot of the Birdcliff. The Birdcliff was founded by a bit of an anti-Semite who liked the Woodstock area because it didn't have a lot of the Jewish populations in it. Eventually, the Overlook Hotel was taken over by a New York City company and all that, and they brought in a lot of city people, which caused tensions to arise, including one sort of horrible beating at the Irvington Hotel. What's it called, the Irvington? Yeah, the Irvington Hotel in Woodstock. And the son of the founder, Birdcliff, was involved in that, and there was a horrible court case where more anti-Semitic things were said. This all caught the attention of the Ku Klux Klan that arrived in town. And that's why we have that index in the book.
Well, it's The Catskills, The History and How It Changed America, Steven Silberman with Raphael Silver. And it is a beautiful book. I was just looking at it last weekend.
It's going to be on every coffee table by the end of the holidays, I think.
In our region, certainly.
Yeah, I think it's going to really do well.
Okay, next.
Moving on. Are you a wood fire type of guy?
No.
Not at all. Okay.
Well,
then some of this might be lost on you, but my next book is Norwegian Wood, Chopping, Stacking, and Drying Wood the Scandinavian Way.
Okay.
This book causes a lot of excitement in our store every time somebody walks in who is some type of either a fire creator or a chopper or a stacker.
Yeah.
The reason is because it's a very meticulous type of work, and people get very, very fussy about how they do this stuff. I'm personally like big on stacking wood.
Oh, you like that? Also,
yeah, oh, I love it.
Yeah, okay.
It's just kind of I guess I'm part Norwegian also, so that's part of it.
Oh, there you go. It's in the genes.
Exactly. The book is great, though. It opens up with a history of using wood as fuel in Europe, which is so extreme it makes you wonder why there's even a tree left in Europe. and then it breaks everything down to tools and chopping and stacking and seasoning, and finally your fire and your stove. As Thoreau says, every man or woman looks at his wood pile with a kind of affection. I love to have mine before my window, and the more chips around the chopping block, the better to remind me of my pleasing work.
So this doesn't involve a log splitter?
It Well, it can.
It can.
That's
okay.
One of the tools.
Oh, it is one of the tools. Oh, yeah. Okay, all right.
There's a lot of different tools you can use for splitting wood.
Okay.
But in terms of, I'll just give you a few little tips here for people who actually are into this type of thing. An unseasoned pile of wood. Unseasoned meaning it was felled recently and so it's not fully dry.
Yeah.
You should stack it loosely, meaning that you should be able to have a mouse run through the pile.
Okay.
It should also be faced in a direction so that wind can blow through it. Keeping it dry.
And then, but still put a tarp over it so it doesn't...
Put a tarp over it, but you shouldn't put it within a woodshed until it is fully seasoned because it needs to actually fully dry.
Right.
There's also the controversy of bark up or bark down.
Okay.
In your stacking.
Typically, we would do bark up, but it would help in the stacking, right? And wouldn't it depend on...
Well, the controversy comes from Norway because in the coastal areas, there's a lot of rain. And so bark up would slightly help protect the wood... from getting too wet.
Okay.
I mean, bark usually.
So every piece would be bark up.
Bark up. But in the inland area where there's less rain, the moisture comes up from the ground because of humidity, especially in the summer. So they do bark down to help protect the wood from the moisture rising up.
Okay.
And how do you tell a wood is dry? You can, a couple ways you can do it. I find this funny. You can take two things of wood, clunk them together. And what you should hear is like a hard ringing sound. If you hear like a thud, you have wet wood.
Right.
And that's like the nightmare for all people making fires as well.
Right, because that just means smoke.
Exactly. And there's one other great way you can do it too. You could take dishwashing liquid, put it on one end of a log, blow through the other end, and you should make bubbles.
Well, that one definitely sounds like the more
now
fun
people
way.
All across Hudson Valley are going to be outside.
That'd be really cool.
Everybody's going to head outside and try this now.
All right.
So
well, that's fascinating. So the name of the book is Norwegian Wood, Chopping, Stacking, and Drying Wood the Scandinavian Way by Lars Midding.
Correct. All right. Staying outside a little bit, I have Growing Tomorrow, Behind the Scenes with 18 Extraordinary Sustainable Farmers Who Are Changing the Way We Eat. This is by Forrest Pritchard. Brief history. Forrest is an English major who came home to the family farm and basically it was in disarray, and against all advice, he took it over and made it a success. He made a success by focusing on the sustainable farm movement, the whole farm-to-table thing. This is about 5 or 6 years ago, and he put out a book called Gaining Ground, which is a big success. He now has gone across the country, and he has chosen 24 sustainable farmers. And he's telling their stories in beautiful photographs and recipes and just how they fit into the sustainable farm movement. Close to home here, he went to Ronnybrook Farm. Do you know Ronnybrook?
I do.
Yeah, you see it all in all the stores around here.
Sure.
In fact, it's even at Logan Airport, of all things.
Really?
Yeah, there's a kiosk at Logan Airport that he tells a funny story of that he met with the Ronnybrook people and they said, oh, we just started up at Logan. And then like a week later, Forrest actually happened to be at Logan Airport and there was the kiosk and a woman was there arguing with the woman behind the counter saying, how do you know this is local? How do you know? And she was totally thinking it was a scam and Forrest stepped in and said, well, I was actually just there. So it actually is straight from the farm.
It's very, very local.
It's a really wonderful book. And there's Ronnie also has their eggnog French toast recipe included with this chapter. So you can enjoy that too. Forrest is actually going to be at our store on Sunday, November 1st, and he's going to be with us with the Compost Lady, and I'm tying this with the next book, Compost City, by Rachel Louie. Do you compost?
Yes.
You do. There you go. I'm actually getting a little lax in my composting, and Rebecca Lewis will be at our store also with Forrest on November 1st. She's in the city in Brooklyn, and her book is really about how you can compost even within a small studio apartment. You can do this all without the smells, without all the stuff. She's really good at teaching how to do all that. She's going to do a big PowerPoint thing at our store and teach us everything about composting.
Very cool.
November 1st at 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Compost City by Rebecca Lewis. All right.
Staying on food a little longer, The Cocktail Party, Party, Eat, Drink, Play, and Recover by Mary Giuliani.
Okay.
Mary Giuliani is an A-list caterer down in the city and also is in Woodstock. She started off about 5 or 6 years ago with just a couple $1,000s from her bank account that she started her own catering business and became a huge success. Her focus are parties that are very easy, anybody can do, and yet they're stylish, and they have, like, you know, special little gimmicks to them that people always remember. It's basically how to entertain. She's, you know, a bit of a Martha Stewart, but a little more upscale than that. Anyways, we're going to have her at our store on Friday at 6 p.m. She's going to actually make her classic pigs in a blanket. Mm. And here's a party tip for you. Do not make your pigs in a blanket from scratch. Buy them frozen, and then you just dab a little butter on them, and you put them in the oven. And they taste just like they're fresh.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so that's our big tip on that. Anyways, we'll also have a specialty cocktail of hers, too. It's going to be a fun night on Friday night.
The cocktail party, Eat, Drink, Play, Recover by Mary Giuliani, and the event is Friday night.
Do you remember Low Life by Luke Sante?
Yes, another
local guy.
Yeah,
he lives in Kingston. He's back with The Other Paris. Very similar to Low Life, but it just takes place in Paris. He basically, he has a wonderful quote, which is from Low Life. The past, whatever its drawbacks, was wild. By contrast, the present is farmed. And that's sort of his main interest is in, you know, it's hard to, it's like, this book is like the anti-rich, anti-mansions, anti-boulevards. It's the other part of Paris.
Right.
The part that's pretty much gone, at least within the confines of the city itself, just like Manhattan. Chapters here involve every type of vice and crime, the working poor, the horrible living conditions, just as Low Life also covered. The prostitution chapter is actually kind of amazing. There's actually this theory that Paris invented prostitution. And, I mean, they probably didn't, but at one part during their empire, all across the world, the phrase French women actually meant prostitutes. It was like this, you know, well known that they were shipping them all around the world. Anyways, he lives in Kingston now and teaches
that
at
and
Bard.
Fries.
Exactly, those are the main things. He teaches in teaches at Bard. I read an interview with him in Publishers Weekly, and he's up here possibly only for a few more years. He's waiting for his son to go to college, and then he might go back to the Bronx. I was hoping he'd stay up here and write a Low Life on Kingston, but not. He says that Kingston, he's only met like two neighbors in the past like 15 years, and he doesn't find it quite as urbanly friendly as cities like New York, et cetera, or at least the old New York.
The Other Paris by Luke Sante.
I'll go to a novel, my favorite novel of the fall so far by Lauren Groff. It's reviewed in this week's New Yorker, but quite a big review. I'll warn you away from the review if you haven't read it, though, because he actually does tell you the entire plot line in the back of the book, which is okay. But if you haven't, he warns you to stop reading if you don't want to hear about it. Lauren Groff is really the real deal. She was also on the front page of the New York Book Review with this book. And it's a novel about a marriage. First half from the man's perspective, second from the woman's perspective. The man becomes a very famous playwright. There's a wonderful center part of the novel where they go through his plays and have the plays tell the story of what's happening in their marriage at the time. But the point is that the woman is kind of his main muse and his main inspiration. She also does a lot of the work. She actually edits his plays and all of that. It's a really wonderful novel. Her writing is just phenomenal. And the other thing about it is I want to make a case for the 350-page novel. I feel like there are a lot of novels out these days that are like 500-plus pages. You know, the big brick
very,
books.
Very big.
Yeah, I mean, that's always sort of been the case, but I feel like we've lately just had a lot of them. And there's something about a 350-page novel that just kind of does the job. It's
a 350-page good novel.
Well, yes, exactly.
Yes.
But
yeah.
I guess my point is that, like, somewhere around the middle of this book, it seemed to slow down a little bit, and I had that sort of wondering whether or not I was actually going to finish it or not. And then I just looked and said, oh, I only have 100 pages left. Why not? So, you know, that kind of can spur you forward if it's a 1,000-page novel and you get kind of bored in the middle.
How patient do you get?
You might just say, forget it.
Yeah. We have about 20 seconds, so I'll give you, is there one more thing you want to mention? And
let's see, how about Razzle Dazzle by Michael Rydell? Do you read the New York Post?
I do.
Okay. He is the theater critic.
Yes.
And he's wonderful. He's kind of an old-time, old-school music critic, theater critic who just thinks the world of himself and has this wonderful book out on Broadway from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and how it changed New York.
Razzle Dazzle, The Battle for Broadway by Michael Rydell. For more information on the Golden Notebook and Woodstock and all the wonderful events they have, you can go to their website, goldennotebook.com, or for goodness sakes, visit them, 29 Tinker Street in Woodstock. James Conrad, thank you very much for being with us. Always good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.